The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Sky Broadband. Create, do, explore. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
The Lost Soul of Eamon McGee was recently announced as the joint winner of the William Hill Sports Book Awards. It also won the Air Sports Book of the Year. It tells the story of the Belfast boxer who has had one hell of a life. Eamon McGee has been shot, he's been stabbed, he's been beaten, exiled, jailed, and he's been welterweight champion of the world. And he says it's been some crack getting there. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Eamon, and thanks for coming.
Good morning, Ray.
Introductions to guests don't come quite like that, but it's been quite one hell of a life so far. Tell us a little bit about your life growing up in the Ardoyne.
To be honest, I wouldn't change a thing in my life. I enjoyed my life, even though it was difficult and it was hard. But I still wouldn't change a thing to this day. I wouldn't be Eamon McGee. I wouldn't be myself.
The Ardoyne, for people who don't know Belfast and the geography of the place, how would you describe it?
Well, it's like a square.
Yeah.
Where we're surrounded by Protestants. Although I'm not against Protestants, you know, but it was just a society that we grew up in. We were surrounded by Protestants. And when I was first born in the Ballybone, the Protestants burnt me out when I was 2 weeks old. And it seemed that I just created on in there in 1971.
Yeah, and so you were born into the heart of the Troubles, I suppose.
I was. I was the youngest boy of four. I'm slightly a wee bit jealous of the way the other three brothers grew up. You know, they're gentlemen and a scholar. They've been in trouble in their lives. And I'm just wondering, like, why was it me that I ended up in top, middle and bottom of everything?
Well, let's talk about that. You were born on the 13th of July. And there was a suspicion that your mother held you in the womb to get the date right. What do you make of that?
No, I think that's a thing that I always just laugh about with my mother. He says, held on to me. She didn't want me born on the 12th. You know,
the glorious 12th. David.
The glorious 12th, yes.
Yeah. And your father, Terence, was in the Provisional IRA, and he had a complicated life too, didn't he?
He did. He had a very complicated life. My father would have looked after all of most of his comrades and employing people, even when he hadn't got the money to pay them, but he always was able to seem to get the money from A, B, C, or D.
Yes.
You know, and to pay everybody, and that also got him into a small difficulty with the Republican Army.
Because there was a bounced check issue and he was exiled to the UK, but he came home and hid in your house.
He did, for 9 months. And he walked up and down from the kitchen, from the back kitchen right to the front for 9 months, up and down, up and down, up and down. And we had our own wee private knock to get in there to your own house, which was also disgusting. Even when I was a wee baby, people used to slag me and have a laugh about me. Oh, your father's dead, your father's dead. And I had more fights and difficulties with other people to defend myself because I couldn't tell them, it isn't a house, you stupid so-and-so, you know, because I couldn't get telling them. You know, it was against the rules, yeah.
Your mother, Isabel.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about her?
Isabel's the most gentlest woman you'll ever meet in your life, and she still is to this day. And bless her, she went through some hard times. Only with my father and with me. With Terry, Noel and Patrick, they were Theseans compared to my father and myself.
Well, you mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation. The other three brothers had the butter wouldn't melt in any of their mouths.
No.
Whereas it was melting all day long in yours.
Yeah, but I think...
Where did you come from?
Exactly.
What planet did you come from?
Well, that's what sometimes even say to my mother. Like, what happened to me? You know, what the hell happened to me? It's just, remember, every time I was going to the gym and coming out of the gym, it was just, boom, mad rats, rat and rat and rat and rat, and you had to defend the area. And like I said, there was only four ways in, and they just like four ways out, and they always had to be closed off, you know.
You joined the Na Fianna Air and the Young IRA at one point. What sort of jobs were you doing as a youngster for the Fianna?
Well, it's like if I just protecting the district. If we were on the orders of closing the district down. It was closed down. There was only one place in the district that the cameras can't see, and that would have been the place where we would have been planking the fans and heading and out. It was a simple job to be doing, and it was hard, but it was fun too at the time.
If they needed petrol for the petrol bombs, what would you do?
If we needed petrol, we used to go out safing everybody's cars and the drains in the streets. You know, the drains would have been lifted up and the gallons would have been put down. Everyone had drains in the streets. Everybody would have knew just to open the drains and just lift the gallon out and blah, blah, blah. And then first thing in the morning, the milkman would have come around, which we would have had it timed off, say about 9:30. After he delivers his milk all early morning, but at the end of his working morning, he would have been coming back with the empty bottles. So the milkman would have got just asked to drive till a certain place with all the bottles. And the petrol bombs would have been made, and there would have been yard fills of petrol bombs just ready to go to work.
Were your brothers involved in any of that?
Absolutely not.
And here you were, right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of it, yes.
Did you just bump into the wrong people, or did you just have that side to you that wanted to get into messing?
No, I had to say, to be honest, that we were... Ardon's such a small area, and we really, really needed to defend it. And I felt it as if we weren't defending it, who else is going to do it? Or else we probably wouldn't be here to be able to talk to you today.
I get the impression you might be your father's son and the other three boys might be your mother's son. Do you know what I mean by
that? That's you, boy.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, gotcha. Let's keep going, because eventually you turned around and thought, boxing. Right, let's try and get off the streets for a minute and get into something that might make you achieve something else other than notoriety. Why did you get into boxing?
Walked into the gym when I was 5 years of age. I had my first fight when I was 7. And I think the only reason that I was involved in boxing was there was 4 boys, and the older 3 were all fighters. And I think it was the only time that my mother and my father like more or less threw me out. You know what I mean? It was probably the only time 4 boys living in a 2-bedroom house that they were able to have maybe a bit of privacy, you know, both to themselves. So I was more or less forced into going to the gym. But I'm ever so glad that I did.
You took to it. You enjoyed it. You were good at it.
I did, and I never looked back. Like I say, I walked in the gym when I was 5, and my first weight was 7, and I'm still involved in the gym to this day.
58 people represented this country, or represented Ireland, I should say, in the 1992 Olympics, and 2 came home with medals. They were both boxers. Why wasn't the 3rd you?
You tell me. I think it was a hell of a lot of politics. And it was the year that Michael Cruyff won the gold and William Cullough won the silver.
That's right.
And with me being 10 years national champion, it's not as if I didn't have to prove myself anywhere, and no matter what part of the world they were sending me to, I was also winning as well.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, Eamon, you're not good enough to go to the Olympic Games. I mean, what have I got to do to prove it? I've been fighting for 10 years and was undefeated in 10 years. And so I'm more embarrassed about the IABA not selecting me. And I think they let themselves down more than the Deb and me, but the heart and soul, that near killed me.
After the Olympics, we're heading into early to mid-90s rave culture, and this was something that was appealing to you. Why did you start going, I'm into this?
Whenever the IABA didn't send me to Barcelona, they decided to send me to Tenerife. So I went, what the hell are you sending me to Tenerife for? And you can't send me to Barcelona to the Olympics. So when I went, and that was the first time that I tried an E, and since then I didn't look back. But although I don't take drugs now, it's just amazing how wee silly wee things you get do trigger your mind off.
Which it did. So you took your first ecstasy, and what did it do for you?
It was great at the time.
What did it do? Where did it take you?
It also done a lot of harm to my own life and get me in more trouble. I mean, it just shows you how simple wee stupid wee things to get there can change your life.
But you got into the drugs world then. You were into it. You got hooked. And then you started bringing, get involved in drugs back home in the Ardoyne. The IRA, we know down through the years, hate that side of the world, hate drugs and drug dealers and so forth. How did we get to a point where they're now talking to your dad about a punishment shooting for you?
Well, you see, they call it, they needed a long knives. And it was a Halloween night, so obviously, you know, when all the bangers were going off and all the fireworks were going off. So, right, there was 13 of us shot on the one night, as they would call it, as the boxing climber. And if they had got me that night, they were, as you know, they would call it a six-pack. It was getting at the ankles, knees and the elbows. So it was, but they didn't get me that night. But so my father went and had a chat with the OC. And because I was able to walk around and volunteer myself, which is an easy job for the Republican Army, but they only shot me once.
So you handed yourself into them without any hassle and said, right, I'm accepting my fate here. I was involved with drugs. Do what you've got to do. Is that by appointment? Do you walk in at a certain time to somebody's house or flat or what happens?
The OC of the district then, and the MDES, he actually came and met me in my father's house, and we walked out of the back in the alleyway and walked round until Blum Park, and just stuck my leg out as the gunman put the gun to my leg.
As punishment shootings go, it was the lower end of the spectrum, wasn't it? Because you didn't exactly get any bone shot through. So where did they shoot you, and how did they? What sort of injuries did you incur?
No, it was a flesh wound. As we would call it, to make sure it was a flesh wound on the left calf. And again, which I'm actually a bit proud of myself, I actually put on in two weeks later, I put on and defended my Irish title again in Nicest Stadium. So then I put on and won the Irish title again 2 weeks later, and there was still blood pissing down my leg.
And you kept going?
Yes.
You started a family. Tell me about Eamon Jr.
Eamon Jr. was a most delightful child till you ever want to brought up in your life. That was the last thing that was ever expecting, what happened to that beautiful son of mine.
As a boy, what was he like? Was he quiet? Was he a bit like your brothers, less like you?
Yes.
He got your mother's side of the family, did he?
Yeah, he definitely had Terry and Noel and Paddy's humour. Butter wouldn't melt in his mouth.
What did he want to do when he grew up?
He only had two professional fights, and I promise you that he would have went on to be a world champion himself. He was very, very good at what he'd done. Yeah.
And was he interested in engineering as well, and that
he
side
was,
of things?
He was very. All my children were very well educated. I made sure that they had everything that I never had in my life, and to this day, they're beautiful children.
In May 2015, just 3 years ago, your son Eamon was ordered a pizza late at night with his girlfriend. What happened?
He went out to pick the pizza up, and the assassin, should be treated as an assassin. He was sitting waiting on his prey, and as Eamon walked out, as we all know in Turkey, once they leave school, they've got to go into military school. So the first thing you do is learn how to use knives. Before they learn to use guns. So he came behind from Eamon. He struck him twice in the leg. And as Eamon hit the deck, he made two strokes straight into the lungs. Which the only good thing about that there is that he didn't suffer too much. He played it quickly. Yeah, but not only once the two main strikes were done, he didn't stop there. He continued on striking.
And he had been this man who murdered your son had been a former boyfriend of Eamon's current, as it was, girlfriend. Isn't that right?
I don't think it even was Eamon's girlfriend. Right. I wouldn't treat her as a his girlfriend.
As a partner. It was okay, I understand. And where were you when you heard the news?
To be honest, I was off my head on cocaine in my own kitchen. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, and I got a phone call from my missus and saying Eamon's dead. And so you can picture what sort of reaction that I had.
Can you give us a little bit of insight into that?
to be honest, it would only break my heart if it was the end season. You were always maybe thinking that you could do something, you could do something, but no, you got to tell yourself, he's been dead. It's it. He's dead and he's gone. But I just, I needed to go in and identify his pure body. And then when I did see him, and I seen him naked in his body, and I was able to see the wounds and whatever, he had a rough time. Bless him.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to press you any more on that, because that's just very distressing for you to have to think back on. And, you know, you describe yourself as being, high on cocaine, 3 a.m. a few years ago, hearing that news. How are you with drugs now?
No,
you clean?
They're only commercial. If it's hard service, it's not as that. It doesn't annoy me anymore. I'm a grew out of it, you know.
Yeah.
It's a part of life. It's just growing up with them, you know.
So you say you've grown out of them, or you just use them when it suits you and if they're there?
No, I've grown out of it. But if it's there, if it's not, it's not. I'm not dependent on it, should we say.
What about your own then, your boxing career? How do you look back in it, Eamon? Do you feel like it was a great success and something you're very proud of, or do you think it was a series of opportunities that could have led to better things or bigger things?
It's hard to say. The career, I was undefeated for 10 years, and it wasn't a title that I hadn't won over and for 10 years in a row. No matter where the IBA was sending me, no matter what part of the world, I was away winning that. No matter what tournaments they were sending me to, I was away winning and winning and winning and winning and still coming back doing what I was doing, plus having a bit of fun along the way too.
Yeah, famously you won a fight, but beforehand you just popped out of this arena to have a smoke, is that right?
Most of my fights, I always had a great... There was the odd time that, okay, I'm not going to be smoking no more. I'm not going to smoke before a fight. But I always found it hard. See, when I was coming back to the corner, it was... spitting in the bucket. Do you want to see? It would have been like a left lung coming out into the bucket. Boom. So I always had a great feeling. If I have a smoke before going to the ring, it opens up the lungs more.
Clear it out.
So yeah, clears it out. I have to keep myself right. And it always seemed to work.
Well, and where are you now in life, Eamon? What are you up to and how are you feeling about the world?
I retired in the boxing. I was straight into coaching. And I've had... every champion, as you would say, from Irish, British, Commonwealth, European, world, have had made champions. Boom, myself and John Breen are partners in Breen's gym. Like I say, I was very loyal. I only had one amateur trainer, Patsy McKenna. I only had one professional trainer, John Breen. And I'm always loyal. And I stay with it. There's one thing about the boxing contemporary now at the minute is... they're very unloyal, but me, no, I was always loyal to my coaches.
You're now an award-winning author. If I said that to you 5 years ago, would you have been surprised, or did you always know that your story was this good?
To be honest, I really did know that the story had to be told.
Sure.
I really knew that you don't have to be Einstein till I know that the story isn't a good one. I mean, I'm not that silly, but I knew, I had the opportunity many a times of writing the book. People were throwing money at me, but they weren't doing it the way that I wanted it done. And when myself and Paul Gibson sat down and we talked, it took us 3.5 years of getting this together, and it was done absolutely tremendous. And I'm never so proud of the recognition I'm getting from the UK and the Irish Awards.
And has your mother read it?
No.
Would you like her to read it?
Well, I did ask her, but she says no, she won't. But and I don't blame her.
Okay. Well, we leave it there for now. But in the meantime, Eamon McGee, thank you for your time this morning. Wish you well. Your book is called The Lost Soul of Eamon McGee. It's by Paul D. Gibson, and obviously Eamon is published by Mercier Press. And thanks for your time this morning. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right, 51551 is the text number.
This Christmas,